So it is beautiful to have all our panelists up here to add value with State of the Market. So I want to read something to you all. We are experiencing one of the greatest times to be alive, but the ending, but with the ending of affirmative action, AI and robotics threatening most careers, a lack of funding for startups from undeserved founders and DEI initiatives ending, and more. It can feel like the worst time for us. Would y'all agree? This panel, somebody said no. But this panel is meant to address the problems and solutions head on. What you should be doing right now and how to effectively network for success in career and advanced business. So are y'all ready for that? Let's get started, all right, family? So how can minorities leverage AI models to enhance their businesses, especially in light of emerging threats from automation and AI replacing traditional roles? That's a jam-packed question. Well, that's a lot in one question.
Who are you directing it to?
The panel.
The panel.
The sisters. Ladies first.
I would say for us, I'm a second generation business owner. We are a management consulting firm based out of Atlanta. My father started the firm back in 1986, but we work primarily with government contractors on the local, state, and federal level. And so for us, AI, there's how can we improve our efficiencies in delivering our product is one way, right? And I think additionally, are there any services we can offer the government within our line of products that is rooted in AI? And so that is what we are looking at now, allocating the time and resources to spend that time, because I think, like you said, the market is changing. You have to be more competitive. You don't want to be left behind the curve. And so you have to take, you know, some space away from operating the business to really think about being forward thinking. And so that's what we're doing as it relates to AI.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Y'all can clap for that. Hillman.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Would it be okay for us to just 30 seconds on, would you all want to know like who we are and what we've done and why we're sitting here real quick?
Let's do that.
Can we do that?
Yes, sir.
Let's go back to you so you get the context around why we're saying what it is that we're trying to share.
All right. So I'm Lauren Miller. I am an entrepreneur and second generation business owner. I currently serve as the chief growth officer for Miller 3 Consulting. Like I mentioned, it's a second generation consulting firm that my father started back in 1986. We actually specialize in inclusive procurement. So I know you spoke about DEI. Mm-hmm. We do work called disparity study work, which is a legal predicate that sets the goals. So if you've heard of cities or states that say, you know, 30% of every construction contract has to go to a minority business owned business, those goals are set by disparity studies that we currently do. And so we mainly work in that space within procurement, economic development, agriculture, most recently entertainment. So,
Thank you. Context is key. All right.
My name's Hillman Story. I spent 25 years in Silicon Valley. In that time, I've been a three-time founder. I've had two exits. I became a venture capitalist. I run a firm called 212 Angels, which does seed stage investing. So far, we've invested in 42 different companies. I've personally invested in over 100 companies as an angel investor. I also run a go-to-market strategy firm called Closed Loop, which is global in Johannesburg, London, New York, Miami, Houston, and San Francisco. We work with companies going from zero to 100 in go-to-market strategy. I've worked with companies as an advisor that includes Salesforce, SurveyMonkey, Box, Bill.com, Stripe, about 150 others. And recently, I moved from San Francisco to Miami to found The Source. We're upstairs. If you want to talk to us, you can find Stefan, who's creeping around here somewhere by the stage with a camera. But The Source is intended to be a hub. It is not intended to be. It is a hub in South Florida specifically for black and brown folks to come for entrepreneurship education. If you are a small business who's looking to try to find ways to integrate technology into your business, then we are a source. We are a place to get connected. If you are a founder who is looking for funding, we have funding resources. And if you're an individual who's looking for a job in tech, we have resources for workforce development.
Y'all can give a round of applause for that. Thank you, Hilma. Troy?
Everyone, my name's Troy. I'm the founder of Course Careers. We help a lot of people get into the tech industry. This guy here, he was actually one of the reasons I was able to break into tech sales at 18 years old.
Wow.
So definitely check out his
Make
book.
Me feel old, though, man.
But yeah, we've helped a ton of people land tech jobs now with untraditional backgrounds. So no degree, no experience. We teach in a large variety of different careers now. And then my background is starting really young, so I know how to do that. And then I bootstrapped Course Careers from no revenue to 8 figures, very profitable and growing very fast.
Thank you. And this guy's the reason why I got into tech. So we got a, you know, we got a little vibe going on up here. So I would like to read something where it says a report recently came out that shows white Americans are not in the top 5 list of earners in America. The top earners are Indian, Japanese, Nigerian, Chinese, Liberian, and others. When we look at the source of these groups' income, it is usually either tech, medical careers, and then they collaborate to create 8-figure businesses in that space. In detail, what advice do you have for those watching on how to strategically collaborate to do the same?
So I believe, you know, Cyrus talks about this a lot in terms of thinking about entrepreneurship from the standpoint of working in tech first, right? Generating those resources, generating that network, and developing those key relationships that you can start in entrepreneurship way more advanced from being a novice, if you will. There's nothing wrong with being a novice and pursuing entrepreneurship, but I think when you think about that level of 8-figure businesses, right, you want to have those resources. And the reality is you need funding and money for that. You guys have these big paying tech jobs. You can save up those resources to have your own startup capital, at least your seed capital, right? Or at least have a network that can provide that seed capital. So I think there is something to pursuing entrepreneurship as a next step from working in tech for 5-10 years and building that relationship. And so I think that is how you are able to compete. I think additionally, because I'm in government contracting, is looking at what are those B2G models, right? So if you're currently working in tech right now, does your current company have government contracts? What solutions are they providing? Are there innovations that you can change? Are there opportunities there that your company is currently missing? It may not be something you want to pursue today, but it's a seed that you can currently start to plant. What agencies currently buy or may buy these particular service or products. So I think those are a couple of things that I would particularly focus on.
Yes, ma'am. All right, Hillman, I'm going to pass it to you.
You didn't leave much left. That was brilliant. I'll tell you, personal experience. I'm a student of history, and I study history not so I can spend my time looking in the rearview mirror, but so I have an idea of where it is we need to go, right? And one of the things that I did in spending time in Silicon Valley, it's a very interesting ecosystem because it's very deliberate, and it's been a very brief amount of time. It's a blip on the radar if you think of like human history of what's taken place there and the amount of wealth that's been created for lots of the populations that you were just talking about. When I first moved out there, I won't tell you the year, but it was a long time ago. When I first moved out there, I was a tech recruiter. And well, I guess I have to tell you the year now. It was around the Y2K. And I don't know if anybody in here was even born or remembers this time, but around Y2K, everybody was afraid that all the computers, all the banking systems, all the light companies, everything else was going to flip to the 00 and the whole world was going to shut down. And we were all scared, running people storing gold in the mountains and stuff. So what tech companies were doing in the Bay Area is they were trying to find people for these programs that had been written like 30 and 40 years prior. And we, as a population in the United States, didn't have enough coders to be able to fix that problem because we'd moved on to different types of coding languages. But you know where they all were? They were in Southeast Asia, they were in Brazil, they were in India. So what we did is the government created this process of an H-1B visa process, which allowed people to come to the United States for specializations that we were not able to accommodate. U.S. citizens could not be employed for. And so this giant influx of people came from India. I was placing these people in jobs. They worked for The Gap, they worked for Bank of America, they worked for Wells Fargo, this, that, and the other. And they solved the problem, and as we know, we're here today, so the world did not end. Here's what's interesting, though. They got visas. They got jobs paying higher than 6 figures. Many of them got the benefit of that job, allowing them to get further professional development. So they're already coders, got greater skill set. And then they left with that money, brought their families over, and said, you know what? I can start a company. They funded that company from the villages that they lived in India, and then they also got salary arbitrage by hiring folks in India, which has great computer science programs, to be able to be coders. Then they started bringing those folks over and into the country. This all took place inside of like 15, 20 years. Generational wealth transformation inside of 20 years based on a software as a service model. So someone over here, when you were talking about the doom and gloom scenario, which all these things are true, and I say
this, people get mad at me because I'm an optimist. I can't wake up thinking that I'm suffering and right. I'm dying, and my people are never going to get anywhere, and it's where I just can't. There are people who can, but I have to be looking at the prize. I'm like, where is the prize? Where is the gold? And the gold in the industry right now is that you can create generational wealth faster than ever before because AI has shortened the time frame that it takes for you to get to market with a product. Mm. So this is a long-winded answer. I apologize. I hope it's valuable. The idea here is that if we stop being scared, stop reading the headlines, and look more just among us in our community. You got three people on stage. This is like a lineage. A book I wrote got him into something, got you into, got all of us sitting here on the stage. This is inside of what, 3 years?
Yes.
Not long. Yeah. All of us are sitting in this room now. We know each other. Be intentional about the people you meet. Stay in touch and just lift one another up. And we are all we need. We don't need handouts. We are all we need.
Beautiful. I don't know if there's much left, but Troy, you wanna add something to that?
How do I follow up with that? So I'll focus more on the partnerships part. So the question posed is, how do you form partnerships with people who have different skills and different backgrounds so you can start a company? I think the most important thing to remember here is you have to bring something to the table. You can't just go to a software engineer with an idea and say, hey, build this. So usually there's one of three main backgrounds you need to form a partnership. Either you need to be a software engineer yourself or someone who can build the product. So if in the tech industry, that's usually software. You need to either be able to sell it. So for a B2B product, that means tech sales. For consumer products, usually that means a marketing background. Or you need to be an expert in the industry so you understand how you're going to be able to build something that is substantially better than the status quo. You really have to have one of those three things to convince other people to give you their time for essentially free on a whim. So I would first focus on getting one of those three things before trying to partner. But then once you have one of those three, your life's going to be much, much easier when you're trying to get those co-founders and raise that money.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, Hillman, this question is to you, and it sounded like you almost kind of answered it a little bit with some of the things that you hinted at. So I'm gonna ask it anyway. Maybe you can give some depth and some context to it. So what advice do you have for minorities looking to break into the tech industry as entrepreneurs, considering the change in landscape post-DEI and affirmative action?
I would say discount the whole second half of that question.
doom and gloom.
Seriously, discount the whole, I'm trying to say this the proper way. These are important things for us collectively to understand. And then you have to be able to feed your family. And we don't feed our family on the headlines of the collective. We feed our family on us getting up, walking out the door, and being able to get something done. So I just want to divide the two questions, if that's okay. And I'm going to give the DEI question to somebody else over here. But the first part of the question, I think that success comes from you being passionate and competent, and a couple other adjectives that you could add to that. Just wanting to get into tech because it looks like the shiny thing and the way to go and people are making money at it and someone gets to park an Aston Martin out in front of the place. Yeah, I saw you, Cyrus. you know what I mean? That can't be enough motivation because that's not sustaining. And don't get it twisted. There are plenty of people that I meet every day that are making a lot of money doing nothing. I can't even use their phone. Don't know anything about tech. So if it's about making the money, I say err on the side of something you're passionate about, because when it gets tough, it's one of the challenges with social media is it all looks easy because you only see the end.
Right.
You only see the arrival. Mm-hmm. You don't see the toil. There are some folks, and I appreciate the folks who are out there showing the hustle, because the hustle is real and it happens every day. And I say this all the time, that I get to get up and talk about the accomplishments I've had. I have failed way more than I've accomplished. That wall is much more filled with dead things behind it that I don't want to even look at and keep showing up every now and then. But my point being, if you want to get into tech, don't think about it as getting into tech. Everything has technology. If you want to be in automotive, underlies tech. You want to be in CPG? Consumer product, what is it? Consumer packaged goods? What does it stand for? I can throw acronyms all day long. You want to get into food? It's got tech. You want to get into transportation? It's got tech. You want to get into high tech security? That's tech too. But just find the thing that you really enjoy and get competent and deep in that space, and then associate tech to it and figure out what the path is to get into that thing, because you'll stick with the hard journey that it takes to be able to get there. Much more, you're much more likely to stick to that when you have passion about what it is that you're doing.
Thank you.
And I did want to just add something to that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we don't really recognize the period after Reconstruction when we were freed from slavery. And so we built over 100 cities after that time. So when we think about the freedoms that we may be losing today, we had way less freedoms back then. Right, so there is a cyclical nature of us having advancements and then being taken back. Mm-hmm. What's happened is another cyclical nature of that happening right now. So is it something to be cognizant of? Yes, for sure. Is it something to be afraid of? Hell no, right? It's like, when have we ever had all the things?
That's right.
Ever had all the things, yet we have still succeeded, right? So it may be a little bit harder. Partnerships may be more paramount, education, technology, but I just want us to recognize that, yes, these things are happening, but it is not doom and gloom. Like, we have overcome so much. I don't want to cuss. We've overcome so many things, okay? So I just wanted to add that little piece.
Please, thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, so we are in the AI boom, and I want to direct this question to you, Lauren, and to you, Troy. How can a person who's just now breaking into tech and not even in the industry take advantage of this opportunity if they don't know how to program? So how can a person who's just now breaking into tech and the person who isn't even in the industry take advantage of this opportunity if they don't know how to program?
I would just say become a student. You know, become a sponge. If you don't really know what you want to do yet, like, you have to start doing things to figure out what you want to do. Sometimes that's learning, you know, informational interviews, pulling up to things like this. Like, you have to be active in that pursuit, even if you don't know. You don't know what you don't know, right? So I don't think you will ever be in a position where you fully know things. So I think you just have to be an active learner and being a student and kind of narrow down what, you know, makes your eyes get big, what, you know, keeps you up at night, and then kind of dive deeper in that, so.
And to follow up on that, to give you some more context, I mean, our company, we have a lot of people that land jobs in all these different industries. And as far as I know, there's not a single role that's just AI specialist. So AI is really part of every single industry now. Mm. I don't believe it's replaced any jobs completely. It just enhances the efficiency a little bit. So for example, in the sales industry, you can use AI for prospecting and writing emails. We hire project managers. They use AI for research and writing, but it hasn't taken away any of these jobs, and I think that's still a ways out. So really, every single industry you go in, you're probably gonna use AI in some capacity, but it's only gonna be a small portion of your job, and you just wanna stay on the latest and greatest best practices on how to leverage AI in your specific role, so you can have an advantage in that role.
Can I please add something?
Go ahead.
Okay, this is something that I think is profoundly important to understand about AI. Does anyone know who Jensen Huang is? Just raise a hand. Anyone know Jensen? I know you do. Okay, if you don't, Google him. Last name is H-U-A-N-G, first name is G. Don't do it now, I'm talking. Google him, it's important. He is the CEO of, on any given day, the most valuable company in the world, which is NVIDIA, which produces GPUs, which is what is necessary for AI to run on for generative processing. Here's what's important. He said, no one should be thinking about coding anymore. Here's the reason he said it. Because you can go to ChatGPT. Show of hands, how many people have a ChatGPT account? Okay, we all do, thank goodness. I was just on a stage like 3 days ago, I asked the question, four hands went up in a room of folks like us, and I was like, okay, let's just stop talking, everybody get out your phone. Here's the thing, you can prompt it and say, in JavaScript, code me a front end for a dating app, and it will do it. So don't tell me I'm scared about AI and AI engineering. It ain't about engineering. It's about the English language. A large language model has gone out and combed the internet for all of the English words on the internet to inform what ChatGPT is doing every day. That means the entire corpus of humankind that is on the internet, which is a whole bunch of stuff, is there. Every coding language, all there. Just tell it what to do. So learn how to prompt, and you don't have to code.
There's also no code today. For folks who are interested in building an app, if anybody's sitting here thinking, I've had this great idea for, I don't know why nobody's done this app, but I don't know how to code this, that, and the other, there are no code tools like Bubble that you can go to and drag and drop in the same way that you might make a PowerPoint presentation or a Google Slides presentation. The reason I say that this is a dawning, and I love the way you framed it. I just finished watching that movie, Manhunt. That whole piece around reparations, I mean, it's bringing tears to my eyes just thinking about it. And then I was thinking about how much we've overcome and how far we've come. And this is why I say we don't need anybody but us. This is the thing that's so interesting. This technology has now shortened and collapsed the level of education and the timeline necessary for us to truly bridge this gap. If we're not scared of it, if we don't believe the hype and the doom and gloom and actually just get out there and stick our foot in the pool, we can do it.
If you're looking to break into tech, scaling your tech career, or get networking, collaboration, resources, and more, I have something huge for you. Tech is the New Black is the largest tech career platform in the world. We've helped over 1,000 people break into six-figure tech careers and even more scale. But now we're taking it even further with our Techpreneur Discord community. This community offers high-level networking and collaboration with tech leaders, tech recruiters, and more through events, private streams, and daily group conversations. And if you're looking to break into tech, we don't just have all of the trainings and resources that you need, but we actually have partnerships with different companies that are hiring from within our community. So no matter your goal and your career, income, or business, the Techpreneur community was made for you. Just hit the link in the description to join.
Hey, y'all better give a round of applause for that. I want to direct this question to you, Hillman. Less than 1% of business funding goes to Black founders. So what are some of your thoughts on how we could work on fixing that problem?
This is the one I can't answer. So there are a couple of things. Troy and I were talking about the fact that bootstrapping is an important part of growing business. So a lot of times we over-index on where the funding is going because that's a shiny metric. Nobody knows the people who are bootstrapping because there's no index that says these companies are bootstrapping and they've bootstrapped and they've got revenues of X percentage year over year. It's not tracked that way because, you know, the folks who measure these things aren't tracking it because there's no upside to them. There's no stake in it, so why would I, right? That is a profound way to go about building a business, and it's the way that it's always been done until folks decided that there's more ways to make money off of other people's efforts by creating these economies, and I won't go into all that. If you're interested, I'll be up there by the table if you want to talk about that. But how do we go about creating more? It's all about success, and it's also about being inward-focused. You know, I think that I get a lot of deal flow. We probably at The Source get about 10 to 15 deals a week that come into the office pitching us on different things that they do. A lot of the things that I see, because we as a population are not as accustomed as some other ethnic groups with respect to technology, a lot of the things that we come up with right now without a deep technology background are not solving the biggest problems. And when you think of venture capital, what you're saying is, I'm gonna place a bet and I want this bet to pay me 100 to 1,000x at a certain point. And you really need to be doing something pretty hard for me to take that gamble. And a lot of us just haven't had the depth of experience and expertise and even the jobs that create that kind of cyclical environment where I've worked for your company and then I've left as an engineer and I've hired some engineers and now I'm doing this thing and I've seen what good looks like and I've got the pedigree.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
I agree because I worked at, you know, SurveyMonkey or worked at Salesforce or worked at Facebook or Meta or Google or AW or Amazon, whatever it might be. Like, we haven't done that yet. It's coming, though. It is absolutely coming, but it's going to take a little bit of time. How to fix the problem is just success. It's all economics. The bottom line is money. No one will care what we look like if our company can make money. No one is saying that company is going to be a unicorn, but I ain't giving them a dime because they black. No one's saying, well, someone's saying that, but who cares about that person? Most, some fool is saying that. Let me correct myself, right? But folks will invest when we show them the money.
Absolutely. And I think you hit on something that was really important, solving problems, right? As an entrepreneur, as a business owner, solving problems is the key to success. So Lauren, I want to ask you this question, and I think this is important. For minority-driven companies, what strategic ideas do you have around that you find effective in those traditions? I mean, excuse me, in that transition, in navigating that transition. So for minority-driven mm-hmm. companies, how do they thrive in the tech world? Mm-hmm. And what strategies do you have you found in effectively navigating this transition?
Well, I think, you know, entrepreneurship is lined in resiliency, right? I mean, there is no entrepreneurship without resiliency. So I think there is a level of understanding that a part of being a business owner mm-hmm. is going through some shit. That's mm-hmm. that's a part of being a business owner. So I think there's a baseline of just understanding the ebbs and flows, right? And so I mentioned that I'm a second generation business owner. It's been around for over 37 years, so there's been ebbs and flows. There's
Absolutely.
Been times where it was great Christmas, you know what I mean? Then there's times where I'm like, wait a minute, we want a vacation this year? Are the lights on, you know? But that's what entrepreneurship is, right? I think in terms of the transitions, you know, I think it's the same thing. It's like, it's just a part of the business that you're in. I think also understanding, why are you building a business? Is it for cash flow? Is it to exit? Is it to pass down? Because all businesses are not created equal, right? Mm-hmm. There's some tech businesses that can be scaled and sold. There are some that are better as a small business and localized, right? There are some that are a government contracting business that you want to keep around. So I think really trying to understand what your business is, where it is truly going, and what do you want it to be? What do you want your life to be, right? Because you can be in golden handcuffs. Mm. And you may not want that either.
Mm, right.
It's a lot of people in those as well.
Yes, ma'am. And I want you to kind of stay right there mm-hmm. because having that idea of what the end looks like mm-hmm. is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
So could you dive a little bit deeper, and how do you actually identify if you have a business that is better left as a small business?
Mm-hmm.
A business that has the opportunity to scale in space, mm-hmm. right? So could you identify some indicators, if you will, to know, okay, I think this is the direction I want to go?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think it's an internal look of what type of life do you want to live, mm-hmm. right? So you can have people that are making, you know, $500 million, but look at the type of life they may live. Now, they may have exited, so they may live better today, but that journey to get there may not be a life that you want to live. Then it comes to, like, what do you want your legacy to be? Is this a business you want to pass down to your children? Do you want to have a boring business that's back in your family? That may be a small business. That may be a government contracting business, because we always going to pay taxes. So that's why I'm in government contracting, right? Okay. But I also think from looking at your business, it's like, look at your product. You know, is it B2C, B2B, you know, and is it scalable? Right? Mm-hmm. And so some businesses are really localized, right? It may be, you know, your local cities and municipalities, and some things, you may reach the world, right? So that's scalability. So you need to look for VC money, right? Because you can take it to the moon.
Right.
So I think it's about, like, truly understanding your product and or service, right? Understanding the life that you actually want to live, the sacrifices you want to make, right? Because there is a sacrifice for whatever amazing you want. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of what sacrifice you want to pick up and take on. So I think those two things I would focus on, your personal and then your actual business. What do you have?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. There's a difficulty factor attached to anything of value. A difficulty factor attached to anything of value. Troy, I didn't forget about you, so we're coming right to you on this. I want you to kind of dovetail off of what Lauren was saying about scalability. You know, how are you able to look at a product, you know, that you offer in your business and identify if you should go after a VC and say, I have something that I can bring to market and scale?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to understand if this business has the potential to get huge, or if best case scenario, you make a couple $1 million a year. I'm not sure what VCs are looking for right now, but I'm assuming on the low end, it's probably a couple $100 million in an exit. So yeah, most VCs, they need to know that this business has a realistic chance of selling for a couple $100 million, or there's like a 0% chance they're going to give you money. And the reality is most businesses don't have a realistic chance of selling for that much. So going out and trying to raise VC money is just going to be a waste of time. Actually, my personal experience, I tried to raise VC money for Course Careers. I have no network. I was like 20 years old, no previous experience that would impress anyone. So really in probably the worst position to raise money. I ended up just cold emailing a bunch of VCs, really personalized emails, probably got like 50 meetings. So cold emails do work. So I met with all these VCs, everyone rejected me. And then what I learned from that experience is that really the way to get your first dollar is to email someone who really understands and cares about what you're doing, especially if you don't have a network. So I emailed the founders of a company who exited doing something similar. They got it, they understood the potential, and they offered money, and I rejected it because I thought I could make more.
Look at that. So this question is directed to all of the panelists. In a competitive market, how important is collaboration among minority professionals to create advanced businesses and professional brands that can withstand disruptive forces like AI and automation? And before you say anything, we want to curve that last part about the disruptive forces of AI, because it's not disruptive, y'all. We can use it for benefit.
Constructive.
Yeah, constructive. There you go, constructive benefits. So that's to all of the panelists. Lauren, you first.
So the first thing is, we keep on saying minority. We are the global majority. I hate that term, minority.
That's okay. Me you know, and Cyrus just, gonna have a come to Jesus.
Embrace that, though. Okay. It's a good thing to realize.
Right. So I think information sharing, right? I think, you know, sometimes we find out about things, you want to keep it near and dear to your heart that nobody else, they can't know it. And, you know, I do think there is something to, you know, moving with a certain level of intention and integrity, right, with the relationships that you're building. And I think collaboration is key. You know, like, I think there is a quote that Cyrus says, you know, if you want to go fast, you go by yourself. You want to go far, you go with people. And I think that's very true. And I think it's looking at what are some strategic partnerships that can be made that are bilateral, right? That are beyond just a year, maybe a 5 to 7 year look at that partnership, or how we're going to collaborate on research and development, jointly putting resources towards that. I think there's always ways to be collaborative. I think we just have to think outside the box, outside of our normal ways of doing things.
Hillman? If you want to add.
Very little to add. I agree and echo every sentiment. I'll just give an example of how this works. So for startups in particular, I'll leave you the employing the career side, right? For startups in particular, you know, Y Combinator, most folks have heard of Y Combinator before, YC, right? Very, very well-known accelerator, probably the top accelerator in the world. They can kind of put the thumb on the scales of success. They have more success out of their accelerator than most accelerators, than just about any accelerator, actually, in the world. And a company that goes through Y Combinator kind of inherently gets funded and gets to a certain level. They don't all become $100 million, a couple hundred million dollar companies, but they all get further than the average. And the reason is because once you've become part of that group, there's this thing called Bookface. And Bookface, has anybody been through Y Combinator, just out of curiosity? Okay, I've advised a lot of Y Combinator companies. There's a thing called Bookface, and you can only get into it if you have been accepted into a Y Combinator cohort. And what it is basically a behind-the-scenes little message board. Imagine like a WhatsApp, but much more robust than, imagine Slack, right? That allows you to post what you're doing, ask for employees, ask people to buy your product, let folks know what you're doing, leverage consultants, all kinds of information share, right? The other thing is, the way VCs put a thumb on the scale of your potential success is if I'm a VC and these three are my portfolio companies, I'm telling them and almost mandating that they buy from each other. And the money just goes back and forth. So what? I pay him $5,000 a month, he pays me $5,000 a month, whatever. But you know what? To the other VCs who invested, he's got $5,000 a month in recurring revenue.
Right.
That mm-hmm. looks pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. So all we have to do is stick together and keep a mindset around that. Always consciously looking, not just for the partnerships that lead to dollars outside, but to the things that I could replace with what I'm doing today. If I'm using a calendar app and you've started a calendar app, you know what, I'm gonna give you a shot because I know that that's gonna go both ways and whatever I'm doing, you're gonna buy from me. The more we do that, and I know we struggle with this, we've struggled with it for years, and there's reasons that we could go back to with trauma around why we don't do that, but we need to consciously and intentionally begin to do this, and that's how the collective rises. Rising tide floats all boats.
That's a beautiful answer. Troy, did you want to add anything to that?
I could just share on my personal experience. Mm-hmm. I come from a background where I grew up in Atlanta, so it's the hometown. No family
okay,
connections.
Okay. ATL native in the building.
ATL.
ATL-ian.
So yeah, just grew up in a neighborhood here. I mean, my parents aren't special. I don't come from a wealthy family. I don't have connections. I never went to college, so it's like I'm in a bad position when it comes to networking. I've never had any investors, any advisors. No one's ever helped me build Course Careers or give me advice on how to do it. I've always figured it out on my own, and the good news is the internet allows you to do that, and I've gotten way further than most companies have just because I know that I'm not getting help and no one wants to help me, no one cares to help me. So that's the truth of it. So it's if someone doesn't have skin in the game, they're probably not going to help you, or the advice they give isn't going to be nearly as good as someone who is like making a bet with their own money. So, but the good news is the internet exists. You can read books, you can take online courses, you can learn things on your own and figure it out. You don't need to count on investors and other people to give you information or support to get things done.
Thank you. Thank you. And Hillman, I want to direct this question to you, sir. And it's going to dovetail off of one of the things that you mentioned, and Troy highlighted it as well, which is around mentorship. So what role does mentorship and networking play in helping minorities succeed in the tech industry? And how can they build a high earning network in today's market?
So mentorship is hugely important. One of the stats I'm most proud of, I'm doing some quick math in my head. One of the stats I'm most proud of is that in the 25 years that I've been in Silicon Valley, when I first got out there, I had never ever worked with a black startup founder. And it took years for me to get to that point. And now from my network of companies that I've advised or invested in, there are 11 black startup founders. CEOs of companies, and I don't mean startup, I mean like past Series C, which is, if you're following these things, Uh-oh. That means you're kind of on the path to do
stuff.
Yeah,
we can clap for that.
A lot of that happens just from, yeah. I've been around a while, and I think a lot of it happens because we picked some good folks. And inside of that network, they have then reached down, and they've got more folks working with them who are like VPs of sales, VPs of product development, VPs of engineering. They've reached out, and they've actually diversified more so than most of the companies that I've worked with in the past, the employee base and what that looks like from a DEI perspective. So that piece has been great. Mentorship, I think, is critical. I think that everyone in here can and should be a mentor. We've all achieved something and can impart that to someone else. You don't need to be sitting on the stage with bright lights in your face and a microphone in your hand to be a mentor. You have to look to be able to do this all the time. Each one should be reaching one. If you were looking to develop the network, and I was thinking maybe high-value network is what you're talking about, like a network that can move things
yes,
for you.
Yes, sir.
Bring them something. I'll tell you what typically happens, and I'm doing this a little bit selfishly. What often happens when you get off a stage like this is you go and you're in a corner and someone's like, I'd like to show you this, and I'd like to talk, and I want to do this, and I want to do that and the other. Very seldom does someone walk up to you and go, so you know what, I heard you say something that you're looking for companies to invest in. I'd love to introduce you to somebody. Or how can I help you to identify folks? You're down there in Miami. How can I help you connect with folks in Atlanta that could partner with you on deal flow? Or if you find a way to bring an opportunity to someone who you want to connect with, the doors are wide open. You know, this goes back to all, you know, this is kind of an ancient historic thing about just being able to, instead of seeking to receive, seek to give. If you're always seeking to give, it'll come back. It comes back fast, and it comes back more than
That's
tenfold.
Right. That's right.
That's how I say you build a network.
Has
That's
this right. been valuable for you all, family? All right. So what we want to do now is we want to go ahead and give you an opportunity to ask our panelists some questions.
Hello, hello, hello. You know, I had your name down for Marlon Avery, but Mr. Hillsman, it's nice to meet you. My name is Christina.
Nice to meet you, too.
I hope this doesn't sound like a foolish question, but it's honestly directed to you, miss. So when scaling globally, how does venture capital, like, change things? And also more so, like, what would you look for with other countries, like, when you want to scale globally?
That's like a question for him.
No, ma'am.
Well, I think when you're thinking about VC capital in relation to like building a company, like if the customer base is there, the customer base is there no matter where they're located. So I think it's just the proof of concept and there being traction that there is a, you know, buying or paying customer, if you will, wherever they are located. So I don't know if there's a any barriers, if you will, because it's a business that, you know, sells globally?
Most, I have never found, I do a lot of cross-border VC work. I've done LATAM, the EU, as well as Istanbul. I've done a lot of work in Istanbul as well. So none of the VCs in those specific areas have any objection to investing in a United States-based company, because we've kind of set the gold standard with our... Here's the biggest concern as a VC is, I don't want to give you money that I can't hold you accountable to later. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I don't invest in companies outside of the United States because I don't know how the law works. Like, I don't know if I give you the money and you just dash and it's done. Whereas in the United States, there's culpability, there's legal precedents, there's, you know, the safe note, or, you know, any of the vehicles that you could use for investment that are tried and true, and I know I can go to a court regardless of whether I'm a US citizen or not and get remuneration for any damages. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. Therefore, most companies that are looking for any kind of US investment become Delaware C Corps, or they do something more traditional in the United States in order to develop an anchor. I work with companies in Miami. Miami's a little bit of a LATAM soft landing spot where folks who are looking to come from Latin America to build their company in the United States with venture capital will come there and kind of go through these programs and help you to acclimate how you go about doing that. So there are lots of programs for folks who are coming inward. And there's one company that I invested in that was based in Africa. It was based in Ghana. She's a Ghanaian founder who came to the United States, and we had her set up a Delaware C Corp so that we could invest, and then her investors got on board with that process. But you have to get kind of creative with it, but there are definitely ways to do it.
What I wanted to ask was... if you have a company that you've built, let's just say you had $1 million a year revenue, you had it for a couple of years, and you want to sell it, how would you locate VCs in order to sell your company, or individuals that are interested in buying your company?
Was that directed to me?
Yeah.
So you have, I don't know if everybody heard you, you have $1 million, well, if this is a hypothetical, somebody you know has $1 million company, right?
Yeah.
And it's been $1 million revenue, kind of static for a number of years, and...
It's been growing.
Oh, it has been growing?
Yeah.
How much year over year?
Right now, probably lost about 1.7.
The key number got lost
1.7.
In the... 1.7%.
1.7 million right now.
1.7 million. 1.7 million.
What's the percentage growth?
What is the percentage year over year growth?
I would say probably like about 20 to 30% growth.
Year over how many years?
2.
Congrats. Is this your company? Can we say it's your company?
I don't want to say anything.
Okay. We know who's buying drinks later. So congratulations, first of all, if it is your company. Or congratulate that person. Please let them know that that's a huge feat. Getting past the year mark is a big feat for a company.
With no debt. No debt.
With no, see, he knows a lot about this company.
No debt. No debt.
With no debt. No debt. Congratulations. Bootstrapped?
Bootstrapped.
You don't have anybody else? Nobody else invested in you?
Nobody else invested.
Go ahead. Come on now.
Man.
That deserves a round of applause.
That's what I'm talking about. That deserves a round of applause.
In our achievements. This is amazing. Congratulations, first of all. So let me answer the question and then just correct something. So a venture capitalist is like a gambler. They are investing in your company with the anticipation that you are going to, that money is going to help you to continue to grow it to the point that they get so much money back that everybody is silly and happy, right? So if that's not what you want to do, and the metrics you're showing actually are investable, just so you know. The percentage growth that you've showed would be investable for some VCs, but you'd have to stick with the company. It sounds like you want to sell it. If you wanted to sell it, there are a couple things you could do. Often there are small private equity firms that might come in and decide to buy your company, and what they would do is they say, you're in this market that I can put a little more money in, or maybe help you to acquire some other companies, which then create exponentially more revenue for what you've already built, and they could either buy you out or buy out a majority share where you get, they call it getting two bites of the apple. So you get some cash in your pocket, you also get to sit there and continue to run the company with a whole lot more money behind you, which means you get staff to do some of the things that you don't like doing, and then they're gonna sell it again in 5 years and you get that second bite of the apple where you get to make some money. Is this sounding interesting, by the way?
Sounds good.
Okay, and then the last option is if you went to something like a business broker,
and decided, I want to be done. I want to move into something else. This is no longer my thing. I don't have a succession plan with kids who want to take the company, whatever. So I want you to sell the company outright. What they would come and do is a valuation of your business, valuation, not evaluation, but a valuation of your business saying, based upon your growth, based upon your revenue, your company is worth X. And then they would go and they would shop that to people who buy businesses like that. And then you'd walk out with a check. Or not always a check. Sometimes they might say, you know, there's a note that they'll pay you in 3 years. You could get creative with that thing. But there are tons of ways to do things like this, but those are the three major buckets that you'd be looking at.
Do you guys offer that to Source?
I knew that was coming. That depends on the business, but we could talk. Yeah.
All right, we'll talk.
Sure. Yeah, right, appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for the question.
All right.
Please give them a round of applause. And we have to keep that same energy. We have to keep that same energy. I think Hillman and Lauren laid it out. We got to start taking back what's ours.
Absolutely.
Including the mic. Yep. Including the mic for questions. Including the mic.
My name's Trey. I'm representing T-Mobile here today. I just wanted to say thank you for qualming the fears about AI. And just to give a little bit of industry insight, I know I'm working with Adidas and Clorox right now and working directly with their C-suites. That's all we talk about in meetings. We don't even talk about the telecom. We don't talk about tech. We only talk about AI. Mm-hmm. And it's here to stay. And I think there's a lot of fear around it, and I just want to thank you guys for addressing it, because it's here, it's not going anywhere. Get acquainted with it, because it's going to be here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could literally get married and do your whole speech through ChatGPT.
Oh, boy.
Are we speaking from experience?
I'm not
giving
that.
No, I'm not. Where is that coming?
I'm not married, unfortunately, anymore. But, yeah, I just want to thank you. Everything.
Thank you.
All right.
Hey, howdy. This is for Troy. I wanted to hear about how you were able to grow Course Careers. You know, you said that you started off not having a lot of advantages, just kind of going about it by yourself. So I wanted to hear about some of those early wins that let you know that it was possible for you to actually make it a successful company.
Yeah, appreciate the question. I'd say that for the first couple years, I didn't have any wins. So I was living in my parents' basement. True story. And that's really what it takes to start a company, is you're going to fall on your face over and over again, and no one really cares or is paying attention. You're the only person who cares. And that's what it takes. But once we got our first win, it was easier to get our second win. And I'll say going from 0 to 1 million is the hardest. Going from 1 to 10, I think, is even easier than going from 0 to 1. And then going from 10 to 100, I think, is easier than going from 1 to 10. So it just keeps getting easier. You're able to hire smarter people who are better managers, figure out the problems for you. But I would say the way you win is by refusing to give up. So I think any reasonable person would give up before they're successful for the vast majority of companies. So you really have to be unreasonable.
Are you looking for legit ways to make extra money? Our friends at The Side Hustle Show have put together this cool free 60-second quiz to help you do just that. All you got to do is go to hustle.show. You can do it right from your phone. Answer a few short multiple choice questions, and it'll recommend a few episodes of the hit Side Hustle Show podcast to start with. You can add your personalized Side Hustle Show playlist to your device, learn what works, and start making more money today. Again, that's at hustle.show, or follow the award-winning Side Hustle Show in your favorite podcast app.